Chapter 5: The Kind Man with the Wrong Answer. Elias Crowe learned the first rule of disaster work before anyone trained him. Do not ask people to begin at the beginning. The beginning was usually gone. It had burned, drowned, dusted, collapsed, or driven away. It had been erased by adrenaline, overwritten by sirens, chopped into flashes by pain. Ask for the beginning, and a person would either apologize for not remembering or invent a sequence because they thought order was what grief owed the room. So Elias began elsewhere. Tell me the last thing you know for sure. By the second morning after the return, that question had become a kind of tool in his hand. Not a weapon. Not yet. A tool. The community center on Ash Street had once hosted vaccine drives, youth basketball, tax help nights, and one terrible holiday craft fair Elias still remembered because glitter had remained in the floor seams for 2 years. Now it held cots and folding chairs and volunteers wearing sticker labels that said counseling, family reunification, medical check, and legal aid in letters too cheerful for the room. Someone had taped a hand-lettered sign over the entrance. Returned support. Under that, in smaller letters, someone else had written, "No press inside. The press waited outside anyway. Their lights flashed against the high windows whenever the doors opened. Blue-white, red-white. Camera light, not ambulance light, but still every head in the room turned when it happened. Every returned body seemed to know light could take you." Elias sat at a card table near the old trophy case with a pad of intake forms he had stopped using 3 hours earlier. The forms asked for names, addresses, emergency contacts, last known employment, dusting location, return location, and whether the returned person had experienced any of the following: nightmares, disorientation, panic, memory discontinuity, physical pain, hearing voices, religious ideation, violent impulses, or thoughts of self-harm. The boxes were too small. The return did not fit in boxes yet. A woman named Harriet Solis sat across from him with both hands wrapped around a paper cup she had not drunk from. She was 72 according to the form, 47 according to the face she remembered in every mirror, and older than either number when she looked toward the door. "My son was there," she said. Elias nodded. He had learned not to say was where. He was brushing his daughter's hair. "My granddaughter, little pink comb. She hated the tangles at the back of her neck." Harriet looked down at the cup. "He was 34. Elias waited. "He is 39 now," she said. "The girl is 17. She drove him here." That was not the wound she had brought him. It was the cloth over it. "Tell me the last thing you know for sure," Elias said. Harriet's thumb tightened against the cup until the paper bent. "I was in my kitchen," she said. "I had flour on my hands. There was soup on the stove. I was annoyed because the window was open and the rain smell was getting into the bread." Her voice steadied as she found the ordinary world. People did that. They put their hands on cups, counters, combs, shoelaces, receipts, the unimportant objects that had survived because the mind could not hold the sky all at once. "Then," Elias asked, "then my knees hurt? From falling?" "No." Harriet frowned. "Before, like I had already fallen, but I was still standing." Elias wrote nothing. Writing changed people. It made them perform for the page. "Where did you return?" "Kitchen floor, same apartment, new stove, different curtains." She rubbed one thumb over the cup seam. "The soup was gone." Elias nodded. "I know that sounds stupid." "It does not." "It felt important." "It was." Harriet looked at him then. Really looked. Most people glanced at helpers as if checking whether the helper was still human. Harriet looked as if she had found a door cracked open. "I heard water," she said. Elias kept his face still. "What kind of water?" "Big water. Not rain, not sink. Waves, maybe. But I live 4 miles from the river and nowhere near the ocean." She closed her eyes. "There was orange light on it. Like sunset, but wrong. Not warm." The room thinned around him. Not visibly. The cots remained. The volunteers moved. A child cried because someone had tried to take his temperature. A man near the wall kept insisting that his dog would still know him if someone would just drive him home. But the room thinned anyway. Elias could hear Harriet breathing. He could hear the old heater knocking in the wall. He could hear a volunteer tearing tape with her teeth because the dispenser had broken. Orange light on water. "Did you see anything else?" he asked. Harriet shook her head. "Only people," she said, "far away. I think they were people." "How many?" "I don't know. 5. The number left him before he had decided to say it. Harriet's eyes opened. Elias smiled gently because gentle was sometimes the only bandage available. "Some people have described groups," he said. "I am trying to understand whether the images match." That was true. It was not the whole truth. Harriet released the cup and pressed both palms flat on the table. "I thought I was losing my mind." "No," Elias said, "you are not." He said it with more certainty than he had earned. She believed him anyway. That was the problem with certainty. People in pain reached for it even when it had no railings. By noon, Elias had stopped thinking of the dreams as dreams. Dreams scattered, these converged. He took his lunch in the storage room behind the gym because it had a door that closed and no one was using it except a mop bucket. 3 boxes of bottled water and a plastic skeleton from some health fair long ago. The skeleton wore a faded sticker on its ribcage that said, "Ask me about calcium." Elias sat on an overturned crate and opened his notebook. Not the official one. The official notebook sat in his bag with the unused forms. This one was small enough to fit inside his coat pocket and old enough that the first pages held grocery lists, quotes from books, and the phone number of a plumber he had never called. He turned to the new section. Orange water, horizon, shore without sun, under it he had written H. Solace, kitchen, knees hurt before return, water, J. Patel, bus platform, smelled smoke, no fire, orange sea, L. Graves, bedroom, heard someone counting backward. M.C. Ortiz, returned in church basement, drew cliff unknown teen, refused name, people standing where endings go. He stared at the list until the letters lost their edges. The city had 47 official returned support sites. Hospitals had their own intake systems. Police stations had overflow lists. Churches had cots. Schools had family reunification tables in cafeterias. Online, people were already making maps, theories, jokes, hoaxes, prayers. Most returned people were traumatized. That was expected. Most had nightmares. Expected. Most described temporal dislocation, panic, derealization, grief shock, body age mismatch, social displacement, and family status fracture. Expected, but not this. Not the same water, not the same orange horizon. Not the same sense, described in different languages by strangers who had not met, that something had been waiting where their lives had been interrupted. Elias wrote one sentence and underlined it twice. Some returns are not only returns. A knock came at the storage room door. Elias closed the notebook too fast. "Sorry," a voice said, "they told me you were the one who talks to people." He put the notebook inside his coat. "You can come in." The door opened. A boy stood there with his shoulders trying to make themselves smaller than they were, 15, maybe 16. Returned, almost certainly. His clothes had the wrong season on them, light jacket, thin shirt, shoes soaked through from walking in May rain, like he had dressed for a different day and never been given permission to change. "I can wait," the boy said. "You do not have to." "My mom's outside. She keeps crying when I talk." Elias moved the bottled water box so there was room for the boy to sit. The boy did not sit. "What is your name?" Elias asked. "Malik." "Elias." "I know," they said. Malik looked at the plastic skeleton and made a sound that was almost a laugh. "This room is messed up." "It was not my first choice." "Good." That was enough to let him sit. For a while they listened to the gym noise through the wall. Folding chairs scraping, volunteers calling names, one burst of applause when a family found someone they had thought was gone forever. Malik flinched at the applause. Elias waited. "I was on my bike," Malik said finally, "before." Elias nodded. "Not doing anything dumb, just riding home. There was this dog that always chased bikes on 31st. So I went the long way. My mum always said not to take Mercer because the drivers come fast off the hill, but I took Mercer anyway." His hands curled between his knees. "When I came back, I was on the sidewalk, bike under me, same place, No cars, different building on the corner. Some lady screamed so loud I thought she was the one hurt. Did you remember being hurt? No. Malik swallowed. I remember knowing I was about to be. There it was. Elias felt the old internal stillness settle over him, the part of him that was best at listening and worst at stopping. How did you know? The sound. Malik looked at the floor. Tires. But not from any car there. And my shoulder kept doing this. He jerked one shoulder inward, sharp and helpless. Like it was trying to get out of the way. Did you dream last night? Malik stared at him. Elias should have softened the question. He had not. Yeah, Malik said. Water? How did you know that? I have heard it from others. Orange? Yes. Malik stood so fast the crate scraped backward. Did my mum tell you? No. Did somebody post about me? No. Then how did you know? Because you are not alone, Elias could have said. Because the world has made a pattern and I have begun to see the edge of it. Because some door opened for you and for others, and someone needs to stand there before the wrong people find it. All of those answers were too large for the storage room. So Elias chose the answer that sounded kindest. Because I have been listening. Malik's anger cracked. Under it was terror. I saw people there, he said, standing by the water. I couldn't see faces. But I knew they were waiting. For you? Malik shook his head. For something. Elias's hand moved toward his coat pocket and stopped. Do not turn him into evidence, he told himself. Do not turn pain into proof, just because proof is what you need. He made his hand stay on his knee. Did anything speak? Elias asked. Malik sat again, slowly. No. Then quieter. Something counted. Elias felt his own pulse in his throat. Backward. Malik nodded. From what number? I don't know. I woke up before it got to one. Elias looked at the plastic skeleton with its calcium sticker because it was easier than looking at the boy. Me too, he said. He had not meant to. Malik heard it. The room changed. Not much. A shift of weight. A narrowing of attention. The moment a person realizes the helper is standing in the same weather. You dream it, Malik asked. Elias opened his mouth. Outside the storage room, someone called for more blankets. A baby began crying. The heater knocked once in the wall, hard as a fist. Elias had spent years learning how to tell the truth without giving away the part that belonged to someone else's privacy. He had not yet learned how to hide from his own. Sometimes, he said, it was the smallest lie that would hold. By evening, the support center had become less a center than a tide. People arrived with grocery bags, hospital bracelets, old work uniforms, house keys that no longer opened doors. Families arrived holding photographs printed 5 years ago and phones full of newer faces. Volunteers taped extension cords to the floor. Someone found a box of donated socks. Someone else started a list of pets who had outlived their owners and owners who had outlived their pets. Elias moved from table to cot to hallway, answering questions with fewer answers than people wanted. No, we cannot confirm housing yet. Yes, write your pre-snap address here. No, you are not required to speak to reporters. Yes, someone can call your sister again. No, that reaction is not strange. Yes, many people are dreaming. No, not everyone. No, I do not know why. The last answer wore thin by the hour. At 7:13 p.m., a woman in a hospital security jacket arrived with a folder under one arm and anger doing the work of caffeine. You Crow. Elias Crow. She handed him the folder. Dr. Menon at Harborview said your people are tracking recurring imagery. My people? Returned support, counselors, whoever is pretending this is organized. She rubbed her eyes with the heel of one hand. We had a paramedic draw this on the back of intake paperwork. Another patient wrote a phrase. Menon said if anyone was collecting weird, send it here. Elias opened the folder. The first page was a photocopy of a drawing. A black line of cliff, water below, orange light where no sun was visible. His fingers went cold. The second page had a phrase written in block letters. What did it cost? The security worker was still talking. Also got a guy says he heard someone else's last thought, different department, same night. I don't know. I just drive things where doctors tell me. Elias looked up. What was the paramedic's name? The woman checked a sticky note. Mara Vale. He wrote it down, not in the official notebook, in the small one. Mara Vale. Under that, Harborview, each paramedic, cliff drawing, phrase. He should have felt relief. A matching data point was useful. A medical setting meant records. A paramedic meant someone trained to observe under stress. If Mara Vale had seen the same horizon, if another returned patient had heard another person's last thought, then Elias was not chasing vapor. The pattern had weight. Instead, he felt something dangerously close to joy. He did not like that about himself. Joy was not the right response to evidence made of frightened people. The security worker snapped the folder closed with two fingers. Can you do anything with it? Elias looked across the gym. Harriet Solis had fallen asleep in a chair, still holding the empty paper cup. Malik sat beside his mother near the west wall, both of them looking in different directions, because looking at each other hurt too much. A man in a suit was kneeling on the floor, while a volunteer taught him how to use a phone model that had not existed when he vanished. Can you do anything with it? The truthful answer was no. The dangerous answer was yes. I can start finding the others, Elias said. After midnight, the center quieted into the particular silence of people who were not sleeping so much as failing to stay awake. Elias sat alone at the card table by the trophy case. The trophies inside were for games no one had played in years. Gold plastic figures held baseball bats, basketballs, little wreaths of victory. Their nameplates had gone dull. In the reflection on the glass, Elias could see the room behind him. Cots, coats, half-lit faces, a volunteer asleep with her head on a stack of forms. He opened his notebook. The list had grown. Mara Vale, Harriet Solis, Malik Ross, J. Patel, L. Graves, M. Ortiz, unknown teen, a hospital patient named Dan Keane, maybe. Names, locations, imagery, physical symptoms, phrases. Not enough. Too much. He drew a line between the names that had water, another between those who had counting, another between those who described pain before injury, another between those whose return involved a sight of death, not just disappearance. The lines crossed. They kept crossing. A reasonable person would have stopped there. A reasonable person would have said, trauma creates echoes. People share cultural language. The world has just endured the impossible. Coincidence will look meaningful when grief is global. Do not build a church out of emergency intake notes. Elias knew all of that. He wrote it in the margin to prove he knew it. Then he turned the page. At the top, he wrote, the misclaimed, he stared at the word. It had come whole, not restored, not returned, not survivors, misclaimed. The word felt wrong in his hand and correct in the part of him he trusted least. Behind him, someone whimpered in sleep. Elias closed the notebook. He should have thrown it away. He should have handed the folder to a hospital administrator, gone home, showered, slept badly, and returned in the morning as one more volunteer who knew his limits. Instead, he took out his phone and began creating a private spreadsheet. Name, return site, death proximity indicators, shared imagery, auditory phenomena, phrase recurrence, risk level, contact status. He added one more column, then hesitated. Pull direction, he typed it anyway. At 1:08 a.m., Malik cried out from his cot across the room, not a scream, a word. 1. Elias stood so fast his chair tipped backward and struck the trophy case. Several people woke. Malik sat upright, eyes open, face empty with sleep. His mother grabbed his shoulders. What? What is it? Baby what? Malik blinked. I don't know, he said. Elias remained standing beside the fallen chair. Across the room, Harriet Solis opened her eyes. So did three others. They all looked toward the east wall, though there was nothing there but a corkboard covered in phone numbers and missing person sheets. Elias followed their gaze. For 1 second, the wall was only a wall. Then the fluorescent light flickered. Orange moved across the paper. Not bright, not dramatic. Only a thin line, low and horizontal, sliding over names and phone numbers and photographs of the returned as if sunset had found a way into a room with no windows on that side. The line vanished. No one spoke. Elias bent slowly, picked up his chair, and set it right. His hands were shaking. He put them flat on the table until they stopped. Then he opened the spreadsheet and marked every name in the room as urgent. He told himself it was compassion. For now, that was close enough to the truth.